She's neutralized a couple of issues that are animating activists on the Democratic side, and I'm thinking particularly of abortion rights right now. He's a supporter of abortion rights and the issue of gun violence.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we survey Tuesday's primary elections in the state of Vermont. While voters will go to the polls for primary day Tuesday in what's an unusually busy year in Vermont politics. Up for grabs this year are seats in the U.S. House and Senate, plus governor, attorney general, secretary of state, lieutenant governor, and the whole state house. With Senator Patrick Leahy's retirement setting off the domino effect, voters have the opportunity to send a woman to Congress for the first time in the state's long history. But first, the parties will select their nominees for the November general election. For analysis, I called up Bert Johnson, professor of political science at Middlebury College. What races are you particularly paying close attention to on Tuesday?
Well, as you said, there's a surprisingly large number of open seats, and so there's a lot of competition primarily on the Democratic Party side. So there are a lot of Democratic Party races that are contested. I'm looking particularly at the House, the lieutenant governor's seat, the Secretary of State. So there's a fair number of interesting races that are up for grabs.
Let's talk about the race for House. Peter Welch has been in Congress for 15 years. He's trying to replace Senator Leahy in the Senate. So it's, I think, boiled down to two top frontrunners on the Democratic side. What are you expecting?
Well, it's interesting. There was a poll that just came out from UNH and WCAX that showed Becca Ballant with a commanding lead. It's hard to know how to interpret a poll like that, of course, because it's a low turnout race. But it seems as if she may have the advantage there over Molly Gray, the lieutenant governor. But both candidates have been coming out swinging in debates, and so it'll be interesting to see how they do on Tuesday.
Is it fair to say that the winner of the Democratic primary would be considered the front runner in November?
I think that's definitely a fair bet, particularly considering that nationally Vermont tends to vote Democratic overwhelmingly.
Now, this race is between the leader of the state Senate and the lieutenant governor, as you mentioned. At least those are the two front runners. What has it boiled down to? What are some of the key debating points here in this primary?
Well, the two aren't too far apart in terms of issue positions. So in such a situation, candidates will emphasize different aspects of their background. So Becca Ballant has emphasized her experience in the legislature as a leader, as a legislator, and as well as some of her own personal relationships to some of the top issues that are animating the Democratic activist base, particularly involving LGBTQ rights. She talks about her role as a parent and concern about school safety, issues like that. Molly Gray has talked about her experience as lieutenant governor. She comes across perhaps as emphasizing more moderate positions, although, as I said, it's hard to sometimes distinguish exactly what they're, you know, what the differences are in terms of issue positions.
Well, let's break down the race for Senate then, which includes the current holder of the lone House seat in Vermont, Peter Welch. What are voters picking on Tuesday in the race to replace Patrick Leahy?
Well, I would say that Peter Welch has a commanding lead there, and that's reflected in recent polling, as well as just sort of the dynamics of the race. He's running against an activist from the left, Isaac Evans France, but I doubt that Welch is going to have much of a problem winning the primary on Tuesday.
What about on the Republican side?
On the Republican side, Christina Nolan, the former U.S. attorney, has been on the airwaves and campaigning. She's campaigning against Gerald Molloy, who's a veteran. The polls seem to show a fairly close race between those two, although, again, there's a large number of undecided voters, and it's sort of a turnout battle there, particularly on the Republican side, where the turnout is probably going to be quite low. My guess is that Nolan will do quite well, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Now, I know Marcelle Leahy, the wife of retiring Senator Patrick Leahy, got involved in the race for the House seat and endorsed Molly Gray in the primary. To what extent are the current office holders in the congressional delegation getting involved in the primaries as the shuffle goes on?
Well, the current office holders, sometimes, especially with respect to like somebody like Peter Welch, he's running for another office. He's occupied with that. Pat Leahy doesn't like to endorse, although he did say that he voted for Molly Gray early. So I'm not sure what the difference between that and an endorsement is. I think in general, endorsements matter in terms of giving you a sense of what coalitions the candidates are building. It's unclear how much of a direct effect endorsements have on these races. Now, of course, Marcel Leahy endorsed Molly Gray. The other big name is Bernie Sanders endorsing Becca Ballant. So both candidates have big endorsements on their side.
Well, now let's talk about the race to replace Molly Gray. As she runs for Congress, the one term as lieutenant governor will be wrapping up, and that means that position is open yet again. And there is a familiar name in the field for lieutenant governor this time, right?
That's correct. David Zuckerman was lieutenant governor before, and he's looking to reprise his role there. But there's a quite competitive race, I think, there between really four candidates. David Zuckerman, Kitty Toll, Patricia Preston, and Charlie Kimball, all of whom are making strong campaigns for the office, each of whom are emphasizing, of course, their own backgrounds and their experience as they do. One thing to say about Lieutenant Governor is that it's hard to think of this race in terms other than as a stepping stone to higher office. Lieutenant governors in Vermont have almost always run for higher office. Phil Scott, who's the current governor, was lieutenant governor. David Zuckerman left the office when he did to run for higher office. And of course, Molly Gray. So as Democrats select a lieutenant governor candidate, they may be thinking down the road of priming someone for a race for higher office.
Let's pause to talk now about the race for governor. It's striking in this very busy political year in Vermont. The race for governor is an exception because Republican Governor Phil Scott has said he is seeking re-election, but he's not really going to run for it. And on the Democratic side, Brenda Siegel is the only candidate to take him on. So that seems to be a relatively muted race, at least as we speak here in August.
That's correct. And one of the striking findings from recent polling is that a majority of Democrats seem to support the Republican governor, Phil Scott. So that's a striking finding. If you told that to somebody who was paying attention to national politics, they might not believe you. But it seems to be the case. One other indicator that this is a sleepy race is that neither candidate really is raising very much money. Usually to run a competitive campaign for governor, you've got to raise in the vicinity of $1 million, and neither candidate has come anywhere close to that. Phil Scott has $240,000 left over from a previous race, and Brenda Siegel has raised something like $20,000 or $30,000, $40,000, not very much.
What is Scott's secret to success in Vermont, which is relatively blue, at least in terms of who it wants to send to Washington?
Well, I think people know Phil Scott. They know his leadership from the pandemic. He has shepherded us through a couple of difficult years. The budgetary situation is doing well, thanks to, in large part, federal money. He talks about affordability, which resonates with a lot of Vermonters. And I think also what he's done is he's neutralized a couple of issues that are animating activists on the Democratic side. And I'm thinking particularly of abortion rights right now. He's a supporter of abortion rights and the issue of gun violence. He recently signed a bill trying to close the so-called Charleston, or part of the Charleston loophole, and he's signed other gun control bills in the past. So in neither case are activists really riled up against him because even though he might not be going as far as they might like, he's not entirely opposed to those positions.
Okay, let's talk now about the race for attorney general. This one, also a bit of a surprise. T.J. Donovan, who's a scion of a political family, was in his third term, I believe, as attorney general and announced not only would he not seek re-election, but he'd be leaving the position even before the end of the term. So that's left quite an opening in his wake. What are voters deciding on Tuesday?
That was quite a surprise. T.J. Donovan, who had been seen as a candidate for higher office, left the job and left politics, at least for now. There we've got a race between two Democrats, Charity Clark and Roy Thibault. Clark has been chief of staff in the attorney general's office, so she's arguing that she represents continuity there. And Tebow has been Washington County state's attorney, both experienced candidates. And Tebow, I think, arguing that he's got more experience as a hands-on prosecutor, Clark arguing that she's got experience in the governor's, in the attorney general's office. So I think that could be a competitive race as well.
What about the race for Secretary of State? Again, a longtime office holder, Jim Condos, he's not seeking another term this year.
No, he's not, but he endorsed a successor. So he endorsed Chris Winters, his deputy secretary of state, to succeed him. Winters is competing against Sarah Copeland Hansis, a former legislator. So I think Winters represents continuity. He talks about experience. Copeland Hansis talks a little bit more about what we've been hearing from Secretary of States who are Democrats across the country, which is democracy and preserving democracy against assault by those who might question the integrity of elections.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is a question for you. Is the big lie playing any sort of role in Vermont's election cycle this year, the way it is in so many other of the midterm elections?
I think if it is, it is in that race for Secretary of State. And by and large, the Secretary of State's office is from day to day, it's a job involving administration and involving giving local governments guidance on state laws like the open meeting law and the town meeting law. So by and large, the day to day duties of that office are not focused on those kinds of democracy issues, but it's possible that ultimately a Vermont Secretary of State would have to fight back against federal government efforts to intrude into Vermont election administration, as happened from time to time in the Trump administration, or join together with other secretaries of state in combating what the Vermont Secretary of State might see as a question of the integrity of elections.
And what about the State House? Do you expect any changes in the makeup, the leadership after this year's elections?
Well, if Becca Ballant wins the House race, there'll be a shakeup in the leadership of the Senate, of course. Same with, if Molly Gray wins, and then Lieutenant Governor will be different. I think in terms of the makeup of the legislature, I wouldn't expect a whole lot of change. The question in Vermont, with largely Democratic legislatures, is always whether there will be supermajorities enough to override Republican vetoes. So that's what I'll be looking at.
In terms of the U.S. midterms, what are your expectations here as we speak in August? I mean, I think it had been seen as a likely a red wave year by and large. Does that still scan from where you're sitting?
Yes, the betting money is always on the out party to pick up seats in a midterm of a presidential term. So I would expect Republicans to pick up seats. Typically, on average, in the House, that means around 25 seats or so. So that would be about an average year. It would not be surprising to me if that were to happen. The Senate is a little bit difficult to predict because it depends upon the particular seats up for grabs. The betting money is more on the House to go Republican than the Senate. So we'll see.
And is President Biden's low approval rating anomalous in any way?
It's somewhat low for a president at this point in the term, although usually the shine wears off a little bit for a president in the midterm election after the first election. So there are always these kinds of things happening. I think Biden's doing a little worse than you might expect. And that, of course, reverberates into the congressional elections. And of course, that's due to, in no small part, the state of the economy. Inflation is very concerning to people, and the shrinking GDP, as we saw for the last quarter, also does not help.
The ghost of James Carville. Well, we've been speaking with Bert Johnson, professor of political science at Middlebury College, ahead of Tuesday's primary elections in Vermont. Thanks, as always, for taking the time, and happy voting.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.